Chapter 4. Kind of funny how this story kind of mirrors today. If you look at the news back then, a guy had this revolutionary idea, so we're going to keep build a wall to keep the foreigners out, or we're going to get the foreigners to pay for it. And I don't know, Trump might have been reading his Bible, but it's funny. So Nehemiah. We're talking about all kinds of different. Hold on, so let me get mic'd up. Kevin, give him the seat. Nehemiah was a king's cupbearer. Finds out that Jerusalem lies in waste and the walls torn down, the people have lost hope. And it's in rough condition. He sees that he's really upset. He's really bothered by it. He's got a burden for it. And he asks what he can do. And Nehemiah says, I'll tell you what you can do. You can send me there. You can send me there with everything I need, all the provisions I need. And let me work on rebuilding this wall. And Nehemiah goes. He goes and he surveys the damage. And he sees that it's great. And he rallies the people together. And he gets them all excited to come in together and do this great work and build this wall. What Nehemiah has done, we talked about the first day that we started talking about fighting for family. We talked about rebuilding our families, strengthening our families, doing it by the same pattern that Nehemiah did. He went there, they identified their enemies and knew what they were working with. They got a plan and they began to work it. Tonight, we're going to look at the same passage of Scripture there and a few others, but we're going to look at it a little bit different. We're going to look at it through the eyes of marriage and marriage alone. I never can speak on marriage and ever feel like I can speak on it with very much authority, except that I stay with what the Bible says. It's a place that I will always. That everyone I know will always have to work. Well, always, there's never a time when we can let our guard down on our marriage. Of fighting for our marriage is a primary importance. Because when that comes apart, then we struggle to be what we need to be for our kids. We struggle being what we need to be for God. See, our marriage is a reflection of God's love. People see a woman surrender to her husband and the husband loving his wife like Christ loved the church as a picture of those things, and when our marriage suffers, our testimony suffers. So we never can stop fighting for our marriage. But I want to get to Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 6. And it says, so we built the wall. And all the walls was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. But it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, they were very wroth. So what do they hear? So real quickly, the enemy started to hear that they were making some progress. They were starting to patch up the holes, and it was becoming a time like, if we're going to take over Jerusalem, we're going to hit them where it hurts. We need to do it now because they're starting to make a wall, and they're starting to close us out. In verse 8 it says, and they conspired all of them together to come and fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it, to stop it from rebuilding this wall. Verse 9, nevertheless we made our prayer unto God and set watch against them day and night because of them. And Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish so that we are not able to build the wall. These people said, hey, the animals that we're using to carry the brick and the block and the stuff that we need to work, guess what? They're getting worn out. There's a lot of work to be done, and you better believe if the animals are getting wore out, the people are getting worn out. And then they say this, look what they said right there in that same sentence. He said, there's so much rubbish that we're not able to build the wall. There's so much debris and stuff laying down, it's hindering us from doing the work. Amongst that, look what it says in verse 11. And our adversary said, they shall not know, neither see, till we come amidst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease. They say they're getting tired. There's rubbish on the ground. They're getting discouraged. They're having some troubles. You know what? We'll slip in while there's still some openings in the wall, and we'll go there amidst the rubbish and the chaos and the things that are going on, and we'll be right amidst them, and they won't even know it. And while we're among them, we'll slay them. Just imagine this for a minute. Just imagine the work of rebuilding a stone wall. Everybody's seen pictures of the walls in Jerusalem. I mean, these are great stones. Of rebuilding this wall, and you got some tiresome animals. Some animals that are made to pack burdens, and they're starting to get really weary and tired because they're just, it's becoming a job. And the people are starting to say, you know, we're sitting amongst broken down gates and doors, and we have broken stone and all this. We've got so much rubbish in the way, we can't even build anymore. Not only that, you've got the enemy that's outside looking in and say, you know what? They're in such decay right now. There are so many things going on now. I don't think they would notice if we just slipped in among them and killed them. I don't think they would see us if we just come in. Let me ask you this. In your marriages, have you ever felt like there was so much rubbish, so much things that's happened, so many things that's came that there's this old scars from old fights and old things that's went on in your marriage and just some bad stuff, that there's just so much stuff still laying around that hasn't been dealt with, hasn't been moved out of the way, that's going to be hard to build something solid and foundational on top of it? Or that you can build it, but it's going to be really, really hard. Or that, how many of you guys would realize that through some of that rubbish, through some of those old scars, through some of those old battles, through some of those things, that the enemy desires to come in through those things, through the old things, through bringing up the past, the things that once where you'd had trouble, where you'd already conquered and had a victory, and that's all gone and behind you, the enemy would like to come to that very same hole, the very same entryway, and cause you trouble again. The enemy blinds us. And a lot of times the enemy blinds us with our own stuff. A lot of times when the trouble that we have is not trouble with our spouses, and it's not trouble with other people, but it's actually, just real quick, it's actually trouble with us. The debris and the rubbish and the things that we struggle against, the things that we have trouble building on top of, is because they're things that are actually, it's not our partner, it's not them, but it's actually yourself. Jesus talks about this for a minute. You can leave Nehemiah. We're not going to go back to there. But if you turn to Matthew 7, I want to go to Matthew 7 and let's just look at this for a minute. Matthew 7. Verse 3, Jesus is going to start talking about having your own problems, but looking at the problems of others. Matthew 7, verse 3 says, "And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but considerest not the beam that is in thy own eye? Or how wilt thou say to thy brother, let me pull out the mote of thy eye, and behold, the beam is in thy own eye. Thou hypocrite, first cast out the beam out of thy own eye, and then thou shalt be able to clearly cast out the mote of the brother's eye." What is Jesus talking about here. He said there's people that are going around and they look and they see a speck of sawdust in someone's eye. And they say, you know what? You need to take care of that. And while they're saying that, they've got a 2x4 stuck in their eye. What are these pieces of sawdust and these 2x4s? These are things that people, these are either sins or things that are in people's lives that are pointing out and say, hey, you're doing this wrong. You're doing this wrong, and it might be the littlest thing. And I'm telling you guys, from sitting to spending time with married couples, I'm telling you, we've become people that are speck finders. Man, we are speck finders. There are people that can point out tens and hundreds of specks. I see that you're doing that wrong, and that you're doing that wrong, and that you're not appeasing me here, and you're not making me happy there. And if you just fix this, and if you just fix that. But I'm telling you guys right now, from what little bit I know about woodworking, a lot of times whenever you get something in your eye, where'd that sawdust come from that's in the other person's eye? I'm going to tell you what I think it comes from. I think it comes from the board that's in your own. You put that speck there. You put that sawdust in the other person's eye. And let me tell you what that is. You know, I've realized from over the years of working that anytime I ever get something in my eye, anytime I start to get focused on something, it's because I haven't protected myself. I haven't handled what I'm doing rightly. And I get something, some debris, something stuck in my eye, but it's never usually from the other person. It's from something that I've done. What we have is we've all lived lives. We lived lives long before we ever made our commitments to the people that you're sitting next to, the people that you're made vows to live this life together. You lived lives separate from each other. Things happen. You have experiences, and those experiences created expectations. And those expectations cause you to look at this person and expect them to measure up and do certain things. Remember we talked about... Several months ago, we talked about Adam and Eve in the garden, and we talked about loving each other. Like, the problem with the world is that we all think we have options, and Adam and Eve didn't have options. They didn't have options. That what Eve was defined what a woman was to Adam. He didn't say, well, you're not like my mom. My mom cooks me six or seven meals a day, and you haven't cooked the first one. And Eve couldn't say, you know, my daddy worked really, really hard every day, but all you sit around and do is playing video games and clipping your toenails. They didn't have anyone to compare each other to. They defined what the standard of man and woman was to one another. But you and I come to relationships with expectations. We've watched mom and dad. We saw a friend. We saw other people, the way they interact with one another, what that is, and then we come to our relationship with expectation, and a lot of times that expectation to me is like that board in your eye. It's that board in your eye, and you got this stuck here, and you keep looking at this other person, and you keep pointing out all the little nitpicky things, like, you're not doing this for me, and you're not measuring up here, and you're not measuring. Maybe you don't ever voice that to the person that you're with, but maybe you feel like that. You're letting me down here, and you notice all the little things, and you're neglecting to look at the problems that you have. I got these 5 questions, and I didn't come up with these. I was doing some reading. I thought these were so interesting. And I just want you guys, I'm going to read through them. There's no way you'll remember them or be able to write fast enough. But if you can answer them in your head as we go, or go back and listen to this, these are 5 questions to identify our planks in our eye. The problem that we have that we cast on other people. First question was, if Jesus could heal your most personal flaw, which one would you choose? If Jesus could heal your most personal flaw, which one would you choose? Second one, what relationship in your childhood caused you the most pain? Is there any similarity to how you handle that to how you handle your marriage right now? That's a good question. I think that's a really good question. What relationship in your childhood caused you the most pain? Is there any similarities to how you handle that to how you handle your marriage now? Number 3, what do you do when your spouse disappoints you? number four. What has influenced you of the expectations of what a spouse should be if they really loved you? Is it your parents? Is it your friends? Is it your brother and sister's marriage? What has influenced you? What makes you have the expectations that you have that someone would do this if they really loved you? And the last one was, last week, how much time did you spend praying for the well-being of your spouse?
Alright,
let's do it. First one, if Jesus could heal your most personal flaw, which one would you choose? Second, what relationship in your child caused you the most pain? And is there any similarities to how you handled that and how you handle your marriage right now? Third, what do you do when your spouse disappoints you? Number four, what has influenced you of the expectations of what a spouse should be? Number five, last week, how much time did you spend praying for the well-being of your spouse? There's no gimmicks, there's no tricks, there's no shortcuts to removing the beam out of your eye, but I'm telling you, if you sit down with someone and you answer those questions, and as I thought about them last night, and I thought about the specs that I find, and then you get to that last question, well, how much time did you spend praying for the well-being of your spouse? Usually that reveals where your heart's at and what you're looking for. God, will you change them? But you're not asking God, will you change me? God, will you make me be the person that I need to be for them? Spend some time thinking about those. I found that very interesting, and I spent just some time meditating on those questions. But I want to keep on going, and I want to start talking. I want to kind of transition into so how do we fight for our marriage? What is our marriages lacking? That if you look at across the board, what they need more than anything besides Jesus in the middle of them. We know that we've established that our marriages have to be based on what the most important weapon that you have if you're going to fight for your marriage, salvation. If you both aren't fighting from the ground of salvation, you're not fighting on level footing, and it's not going to work out. But the most important thing that we can do for our spouse is to honor them. It's to honor them. Now, you can make a big deal about the word honor, and I don't want to. I want to simplify it for you. I want you to think about honor as just simply noticing them. Just noticing them. We honor our the people that have fought in wars. What are they wanting you to do? It's not that they want you to go and hang flowers and do all these different things on their gravesides or blow trumpets. Just simply notice the sacrifice that was made. When we honor people, they just want to be noticed. They just want to be seen. And I tell you what, if you just boil it down and you see the problems that affect marriages so much, it's just the husband and wife feeling like they don't see each other anymore. They just don't see me. They just don't notice me like they used to. Have you ever been in a moment? And I hope I'm not just preaching to like one person in here. I hope everybody here is getting a little something from this. I prayed about where to go with this message, and I hope that a few of you guys are being able to use this now. But I want to ask you something. Have you ever been in a moment? Have you ever been in a time where you saw maybe a kid take its first steps, or you saw heard a really, really funny joke, or something that made a great impression on you, and you looked over to your wife, or you looked over to your husband, and you wanted to share that moment with them, but what instead of you guys locking eyes and sharing that moment, you realized that they were sharing that moment with someone else. That while someone told a joke, you started a belly laugh, and you looked over that person, and you really wanted just to have a good laugh, and looking into the eyes of your spouse, and just sharing that moment, you realize that was really a them and another buddy moment. That somehow you were being cut out, and they were making a connection with someone else, and you really wanted that for yourself. You know, After that happens over and over and over in a relationship, it's like dumping ice. It's like dumping ice on a relationship. And it feels cold, it feels stagnant. And people just want to, sometimes a husband and wife just want to walk into a room, and they want to be able to say questions, say something, and they just want to be noticed. They just want to be noticed, they just want to be loved, they just want to know that their husband or wife cares, that they see them. When they go unnoticed, it's not that you're not honoring them. Listen, it's when they go unnoticed, it's dishonoring them. You understand? There's not a middle ground. There's not. You can't say, well, if I do this, then I'm just not honoring them. No, you're actually dishonoring them. When they go unnoticed, they're being dishonored. Romans 12:10. Write the scripture down, because this is a verse, especially in context, it's for the church. But if it's for the church, my goodness, shouldn't it be for our marriages? Should not apply to our marriages. Listen to this. Romans 12:10. Be kindly affectioned one to another with brotherly love. In honor, preferring one another. In honor, preferring one another. I'm telling you, if it applies to the churches, it should apply at least in our marriages. You know, I grew up in a home where I saw my parents honor one another. They got a lot of things wrong, but let me tell you, they got that right. They got that right. When my mother came in the house and she said something, my dad made sure that she had his full attention. If my dad came in and he said something, my mother stood up, she walked to the door, and she met him at the door, and she embraced him, and she kissed him, and she said, "I love you." I grew up that, now listen, let me tell you this, that also forged a little bit of my expectations of what love looks like. What it looks like to be in a loving relationship. Now, let me tell you this. As kids, if my mother walked in a room and I had a game controller, or I had a magazine or a book, and my mother said, "Hey, it's time to eat," or "Hey guys, how was your school day?" If it took more than a nanosecond for me to respond to my mother, my dad was springing like a lion over the couch and jerking whatever was out of my hand. So you address your mother, son. You show her respect. If you don't honor your mother, I will make you honor your mother. He demanded that in our household. They had something there that I got to see, and I thank God that I got to witness that there in my home. I see the battle nowadays as we've gone forward. I see the battle in my own household with gadgets and little things that my boys got, these little things called fidgets, and they spin, and I don't even know what they're. It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life. But they're fooling with these things, you know, and other things, and you try to address them, you try to get their attention, and they're not honoring their parents. They're not honoring, they're not noticing them when they speak. But well, here's what I'm afraid of. They're seeing it first in mom and dad. That as much as I want to get on them, maybe I need to get on myself first. Maybe I've set the bad example. Maybe I've set the precedence way low of what honor looks like in my home. My mother and father never allowed us kids to take sides. We were never allowed to take sides. We were never permitted to go there. What my dad said goes. What your mother says goes. They honored one another. They respected what each other said. But when our spouses, when husbands and wives go unnoticed, what happens, and what I've noticed happens in my relationship, is resentment builds up. Resentment builds up. And you know what that resentment is? That's the rubbish, I think, that those people were talking about. That's the rubbish that I'm talking about that gets in people's relationship. It's the resentment that's built up of things that haven't been taken care of. It's the resentment that For 2 years, I walked into my home, and you haven't got up off the couch, and you haven't met me at the door, and you haven't told me that you love me. That when I talk to you, I have to say your name several times so that you hear and you listen to what I'm saying. Honor one another. Preferring one another. This what I'm talking about right now is so counterculture. It's crazy. It is. I saw an artist. There's an artist. You can look this up. If you're not computer savvy and you don't have your grandchildren look it up, because it's the saddest, most eye-opening thing I'd ever seen. But what they've done is they took couples that are sitting on park benches, laying in beds, sitting on the couch together, and they had their phones, right? And this artist has taken some type of Photoshop tool and they remove the phones. And so what you have is these two people that are just standing side by side, but they're not looking at each other, they're just looking at their hands. They're laying in the bed and their backs are together, and there's this light that's illuminating their face, but they're not talking. They're not engaged with one another. They don't even know each other's in the same room except their backs are touching. They're sitting on a park bench and they're quartered off from each other. And they're not talking to each other about one thing. They're just bent over, stooped, looking into their hands. What we're talking about, honoring one another, noticing the other person, that is counterculture thing. That is not conducive to what we're learning in this culture. But Jesus, this is biblical Christian principles. Honor one another, to notice one another, give someone your respect. Because when you do that, it gets rid of resentment, it gets rid of the rubbish, the stuff that makes it hard to build strong foundations upon. Now, look at that part where it says, in honor, preferring one another. You might not be there in your Bibles, but in Romans 12:10 it says, in honor, preferring one another. What would it mean? I don't know if everyone here, if I'm preaching the choir and everybody's like, duh, Jamie, we got this down on lock. We're the best I've ever seen. I don't know if that's you guys or not. But it says an honor preferring one another. What does it look like? What would that mean to prefer someone? To prefer somebody. You know, I've got all kinds of things that distract me. I got things that come up when I'm trying to do the thing that I want to do. I got times when I'm trying to study my Bible and I'm enjoying myself a whole lot, and my sons come in the room and say, "Hey, Dad, will you do this?" And they are a distraction. They're a distraction from what I'm wanting to do. But that sounds too noble, studying the Bible. There's times where I'm wanting just to eat a meal and watch a TV show. They come in and say, "Hey, Dad, can you do this? Can you..." And they're a hindrance or distraction to me. Preferring one another. When that person, your spouse comes in the room, they are a welcome change to your day. They're not someone that's distracting you from the other thing that you want to do. They're not, because they want to talk, because they say, "Hey, listen to me real quick. The day's been really bad." Instead of you as a spouse saying, "Gosh, I don't want to get into this right now. My episode's about to come on in 15 minutes and they are about to wear me out. I know how this goes. It's going to be 2 hours at the kitchen table, a lot of tears, we ain't going to get anywhere." Prefer them. Preferring one another. They come in and you wouldn't want to be anywhere else, do anything else, but to hear them out. To notice them, to let them know that their cares are your cares. Picture the exhortation that Paul has. Picture that lived out. Picture the example that Paul lays out, that wives be submitted to your husbands, and husbands love your wives like Christ loved the church. Beautiful, right? I mean, beautiful. I mean, two people wholly saying, "You first." No, not me first, you first. No, not me, but you. And just trading places, and the other person's trying to outdo one another. They're preferring each other. "I want you to be happy." "No, honey, I want you to be happy." "No, I want you to be happy." "No, I don't want to make what I want to make tonight. I want to make what would make your belly, what's your favorite meal?" "No, I want to eat what's easier for you to cook." "I'll go on the vacations. I know what you enjoy." "No, I want to go where you get the most relaxation. I want to go where it makes you feel great and feel good." most beautiful thing you'd ever see. God designed that. God designed that. Honoring our spouses is kind of like paddling against a river. It's like paddling up a river. When you paddle against the stream, you don't really go anywhere. And when you honor your spouse, you don't really go anywhere. What you do is you maintain a healthy marriage. You maintain a great place, a good space. But here's what happens if you don't paddle. You go downstream. That downstream is what we'd say just a minute ago. It's dishonor. It's dishonoring our spouses. It's not showing the example that we just talked about wives being submitted to your husbands. Husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church. When we don't actively honor our spouses, what we do is we drift downstream to a place of dishonor. I heard it said one time, I love this. I don't know, I hope I can explain this in just a few minutes. But a guy was talking about that when a man and woman interact with one another, when a woman comes home and she says, "Hey honey, how was your day?" She's throwing something out there. She is wanting to be noticed. As a guy, you got to picture your moment right there as a guy up to bat. You're a man up to bat, and you're sitting there at the plate, and she's thrown the pitch, and if you don't swing, it counts against you. It counts against you. It's either going to be a strike, or you're going to hit the thing. But you got to swing. If you don't swing, then guess what? That counted against you, and that's a strike. And you didn't. There was a moment where you didn't honor your spouse. You didn't pay attention to what they wanted, and that got by you. And a Christian, this guy was a Christian, Christian relationship therapist, and he said that the most healthy marriages catch 9 out of 10 swings. 9 out of 10 swings. You gotta be batting good for that, don't you? You gotta be paying attention. When they come in, when your spouse says something, when they acknowledge you, you got to be listening. Today, on your way home, as your spouse try to bring up a conversation on your way home, they said something like, "Hey, what did you think about that message this morning?" Or, "Did you see so and so?" Or, "How does this make you feel?" Maybe you just put that off. You say, "Ah, not now. I don't want to get into it." That's strike one. You got to hit the next 9 to have a. To try to have a good marriage. If people are going to see Christ, the foundations of where they will see it in our marriages and in our homes and in our families. And that's the outside world's never going to appear inside these doors and see us here. Where we live out our faith, where we live out our example, is in our homes and out there in the world and how we interact with our spouses when we're at ball games, when we're at events, when we're at birthday parties, and people watch us, what do they see? Those are two people that honor one another. They prefer one another. Wow, they're not preferring they're preferring one another. Yeah, it's great that so and so came up and they got to catch up, but you can tell when they're together, something special. They enjoy one another. How do you do that? How do you do that? And I think it goes back to what we talked about months ago, is remembering that person that you're married to is not just one of the many that you could be married to. They are the only person in the world. They are the person that defines woman or the person that defines man to you. And you don't compare them to another person. You don't hold them up to other standards, but they are what God has made them, and you have chosen to go in a covenant relationship with them and love them just for who they are. If you're in here tonight, and like I said, maybe you want to fight really hard for your marriage. You want your marriage to be the best it can be, and you want it to be a testimony. But if you're not saved, you're fighting from the most uneven ground that you could possibly fight from. Listen, marriage is for people who are saved. Marriage is so God can show who He is through that covenant relationship and through the woman giving herself over to the man, and the man loving, like loving her like Christ loved the church. If you want to have the greatest testimony that you can have, let Christ in your marriage. Let Christ in your marriage. I heard it as a triangle one time, and I'll never forget it. It said, God's at the top. And he put two people down at the bottom, say Aaron and Gabby. Aaron and Gabby's at the bottom of this triangle. And the way that they get closer together is not trying to go this way. It's by getting closer to God. And as they go closer to God, they become closer together. And if you want to get as close as you can to Gabby, how do you do that? You get close as you can to God. And there, in that spot where the three stranded cord is woven together, that you have Gabby, Aaron, and God, all there together, working together to make a beautiful, beautiful marriage. Let's stand tonight. Here's what I'd ask you. For someone here that doesn't know Jesus Christ, the first thing you have to do before you start to work on your marriage, before you start to build a wall, here's what I would never do. I'd never want to build a wall on a foundation that was crumbling. And if you don't know Jesus Christ, that's what you have. You have a crumbling foundation. Start there. Say, I want to build my wall. I want to build my relationship on solid rock. And that's Jesus Christ. Tonight, though, here's what I ask for the rest of you. Would you commit to God, or commit to your spouse right here, right beside you, grab them by the hand, and say, I know I will mess up, I know I will fall short of this at times, but I will do my best to honor you. I will do my best to notice you every day until we're part, till death gets us closer to Jesus. And also, during this invitation time, if this member I've asked you at the beginning, I said, adopt a family, so a family that you pray for, that you'd like to see God just do a great work in their lives. I ask you, if those people are on your heart tonight, pray for them during this invitation.